Hey, Kingdom Roots friends, Chaz here. I am so excited to share with you that we are getting close to 1 million total downloads on the podcast. That's right, 1 million. Can you believe it? It is such an honor that you all would spend that much time with us investigating the kingdom. Truthfully, we would not be here at all if it wasn't for how you've subscribed, left reviews, and shared about the podcast. You've even stuck with us through some dicey audio problems, but hopefully we've got all of those kinks worked out, and we couldn't be more grateful for you. Well, to celebrate, we're going to be doing a couple giveaways as we work toward 1 million to say thank you for how you've shown up for Kingdom Roots. First giveaway is us doing our favorite thing to do on the podcast. That's right, give away some of Scott's books. But it's bigger than we've ever done before. We're giving away 10 copies of Scott's new book that you'll learn about in this episode. It's called A Church Called Tov. All you have to do is share this episode on your favorite social media platform with the hashtag ChurchCalledTov. Take a screenshot of what app you listen to or share Northern Seminary post about the episode. And what we'll do is we'll announce the winner on the podcast once we hit 950,000 downloads. So please share today because we're not very far away. Can't wait to see what all that you have to post. Now, for today's episode, you're in for a real treat. Not only do you get to meet Scott's daughter, Laura, but they share the story of what brought about their new book, A Church Called Tov. In this episode, we'll kick off a four-part series we're doing as a companion to that book. So make sure you subscribe to catch every conversation. Well, without further ado, here's our episode. Welcome to the Kingdom Roots Podcast with Scott McKnight. The conversation designed to look at how the kingdom took root then and how it's taking root now. Today on the podcast, we have a conversation on how the Willow Creek scandal led to a book on goodness. All right, Scott, we've got a special guest on today, and
we sure
I think
do.
It's probably pretty safe to say that out of all of our guests that we've had, you know this guest the best, wouldn't you say?
Yes, this is true. It's my daughter, Laura Berenger.
Yeah. Welcome, Laura, to the podcast.
Thank you. Hello. Thanks for having me.
So let's talk some. So you guys wrote this book together called A Church Called Tov, and I would be curious to hear from probably both of you, why does the church need this book, and why do you guys use this concept of Tov to address this topic?
Okay, let me get this started by saying, and I'll have Laura tell her story of how we got involved with this, and I think from her angle it's a better story than from my angle, but this all started because of the Willow Creek story. And as a theologian, I was being asked questions. Biblical person, I was being asked other kinds of questions. The fundamental question I kept getting asked is, what can I do now so that I don't become a leader like that? And what can we do now in our churches so that our churches don't collapse like this or get involved with these kinds of problems? So that was going on in my life in the context of what was going on at Willow Creek. But this all began right away when the Chicago Tribune story came out. And I'm going to ask Laura to kind of give us a rundown of what happened and how she got involved and how and why she got involved and how she got me involved and then how we got involved, etc. So I'll turn it over to Laura now. My daughter, Laura Berenger, and this is not Laura Taro, one of our assistants at Northern Seminary, but Laura Berenger, co-author of the book.
So I can remember this as though it were yesterday. My husband and I were sitting at, it was March 23, 2018, and my husband and I were sitting at a Mexican restaurant, and an email came in, or not an email, a text message came in from my dad and mom. We have a family thread, and it was this article from the Chicago Tribune about Bill Hybels and these accusations made against him. So I read the article title out loud to my husband, Mark, and we both were like, oh, brother, that's ridiculous. There's no way this is true. We had been attending Willow. Now, at the time the article came out, we had already left Willow. However, we attended Willow for nearly 20 years, and we met at Willow, and some of our best friends are at Willow, and the title of the article just struck us as completely ridiculous that it would even be true. So we end up driving home from the restaurant, and I start reading the article out loud to Mark, my husband, and we get to the names of the women, and we know these women. It's Vonda Dyer. Mark has known her for 20 years. Nancy Beach's name. So long story short, we had this cognitive dissonance where it's like, there's no way this could be true. Willow's saying that it's not true, but we know these women and they're truthful women. They're women of character and integrity. So we get home and we call my dad, and my dad said at the time, guys, I hate to tell you, but this is true. I've seen this pattern hundreds of times. And that really began the unfolding of our involvement in it.
So, this began a back and forth between Laura and Mark and me and Chris for months.
I would pester my dad. My dad would explain to something to us, and it was such wisdom and biblical. Like, I'll just give one example. People were really angry at the women for going public to the media, and Willow Creek would say it's not right, they're not following Matthew 18. So Mark and I would call my dad and say, explain this to us. And so he would say, they're not even applying the Bible correctly. It's not about Matthew 18. And he would explain prophets to us from the Bible. And, you know, and so I started pestering my dad, like, everybody needs to hear this, not just Mark and me. So I would say pestering is a good word. And he would say, no, Laura, I'm not going to get involved.
Then, go ahead. That's exactly right. I said, I'm not going to get involved a number of times. I said, you know, we'll let this play itself out. But I was becoming gradually discontented with what Willow was doing. Chaz, the chances of this story about Bill Hybels harassing these women, the chances of that story being false were exponentially impossible for me, because I trusted Nancy Beach and Nancy Ortberg, and I trusted Vonda Dyer once Mark introduced her character to me, and then eventually I got to know Vonda. But then we were beginning to hear other stories that were not being told public. And so, Chris and I went with students. In fact, Chaz, it was you. We went to Turkey and Greece. Is that right?
Yeah.
Went to Turkey and Greece.
Yeah.
In 2018. And this was June. I should back up and say it was Laura, when was the date of the newspaper article?
March 23, 2018.
I think it was in April. It may have been May, that I sat down in an airport and wrote out my ideas, and I passed those on to Laura and Mark, and they read them, and we talked about that for quite a while. But then in June, we were gone, and when I came back, I simply, I called Laura and asked what's happened with the Willow story while we were gone. We were gone for about 2 weeks on our tour of biblical sites. And Laura said, nothing has happened. And this is what went through my head, Chaz. I said, this is exactly what Willow Creek's power mongers want. Yeah. They want silence to kill the story. So I thought, I'm going to take that document that I wrote up in the airport and edit it and work it and edit it and work it. And I'm going to post it on my blog. And I believe it was on a Wednesday. I'm not certain.
Yes, it was Wednesday.
It was a Wednesday that I posted it. Normally that kind of post would go up on a Monday, but I wanted to get it checked and worked over and edited and have different people read it and make suggestions. So I posted that. And I believe by the grace of God, that that blog post reignited the story having to be talked about. And I know, and Laura knows this, that leaders at Willow Creek contacted us, different kinds of people, and said, everybody's talking about that blog post. And I was happy only because it gave a chance for these women's stories to be seen with integrity and truthfulness and trustworthiness, and that Willow had a bigger issue to deal with. And so that reignited. I think I wrote another one to a couple blog posts, maybe three. And then I think with the breaking of the story of Pat Baranowski in the New York Times, it was all over. I think by that time, Willow Creek realized the women were telling the truth. Bill had been harassing women at that church, and the story had to be told. And from that point on, I think Willow Creek gradually backed off. Steve Carter resigned in a very courageous act, and others didn't. And that was disappointing, but some people started acting within Willow in ways that showed integrity, and the story then just unfolded, and it led it. Okay, I don't know if Laura wants to add anything to that. Do you, Laura?
No, I would just say that we were surprised at my dad's blog post went Christian viral. He was getting tens of thousands of hits on it. And we started getting, my dad was getting contacts from leaders within Willow Creek, wanting him to like silence him, tell him that he was wrong, that they wanted to talk to him. I started getting contacts. Why am I talking? I need to be quiet. We were just surprised at the effort that Willow was making to contain and silence the story.
Yeah, one leader at Willow Creek wrote me, and his basic point was this: if you knew what I knew, you wouldn't be writing what you're writing. And what I wanted to write back, I didn't. What I wanted to write back was, if you knew what I knew, you wouldn't be saying what you're saying. I mean, this to me was unquestionably true. And so it had to be told. Well, at that point, Laura, I got contacted by two different publishers who asked me if I would write a book about Willow Creek. And I simply said, no, I won't, because Willow Creek is not going to give me access to the records that need to be had, elders meetings and minutes, et cetera. And the other thing is, I'm not a church historian, and this story needs to be told in the context of church history. So I wasn't the person to tell the story of Willow Creek. But what happened was, I was studying a book. I was reading a book. I'm fascinated by World War II, by Dietrich Bonhoeffer especially, by Hitler, by the German language, by German culture. And I was reading a book, a wonderful book by a man named Matthew Hakanas, on pastors under Hitler, and how the pastors after the Holocaust was revealed, after World War II was over, the concentration camps became visible to people, and the stories, the entire curtain was pulled back, and the Germans saw exactly what Hitler was doing with Jews and with other people in the concentration camps. So I'm reading this book, and I'm seeing things and I'm not equating Hitler and certainly, or even the Holocaust, the magnitude of the Holocaust, with anything connected to Willow Creek at all. But I noticed parallels between how the pastors responded to the Holocaust and their complicity with Germany in what happened, and how pastors in the United States respond when accusations are lodged against them. So I started taking notes, and that, in a sense, was the beginning of this book. And Laura knew nothing about this. So we were on Christmas vacation. I think this is when I said something to you, Laura. It may have been in the airplane.
No, it was on the beach.
It was on the beach. And I said,
you had a list.
I said, I got a list of things that I got a list of things that we need to talk about. Well, that became a section in the book of what we call false narratives that have to be resisted in churches. And that became sort of the core of something to talk about. But the book evolved in different ways because I knew that simply telling churches, the stories that churches tell to mask the truth or to hide the truth or to resist allegations or to silence women or to gaslight women, all those stories, that's not a book. And it's not one that I would want to write. I wanted to write a book that would guide, would help churches think again about what they need to do to form cultures that do not allow these sorts of things to happen. Now, we're never going to get in a world where no church ever makes any mistakes. So this is going to happen. But we can work now at forming cultures that do not permit these sorts of things to happen because their instincts are in a different direction.
That makes total sense.
So I don't know if Laura wants to add something to that or not.
You got anything to add, Laura?
I don't think so. No. And the part of the book, we go back and forth in the book because you really can't talk about the goodness culture without commenting on what it should not be, what it should not look like.
Yeah. And the book is not a book. This is not a book about Willow Creek. It's not the subtitle or anything like that. But Willow Creek features as the preeminent example of things that mistakes that were made. But we also talk about Harvest Bible Chapel in the Chicagoland area with James McDonald. We talk about the Southern Baptist pastors and the hundreds of cases that came forward through the newspaper articles. We talk about Sovereign Grace Ministries and Rachel Den Hollander. And I had a lot about the Roman Catholic Church, but the editors just didn't think that the Roman Catholic Church was as pertinent to this story as these other examples. So we focused on those, especially Willow.
So how did you guys land on the concept of Tov to identify what this goodness culture is? Maybe if somebody's not familiar with the word Tov, kind of give a little background on what that is and how you guys led to using that as the template for what a positive good culture would be like.
Okay, the word Tov, T-O-V, with a long O, Tov means good or goodness in Hebrew, and it's a wonderful little word, and it started because one of my early blog posts, and I don't think it was the first one, I think it was another one where I did bring up about culture, is that churches need to start forming cultures of goodness, and I use this word goodness because it's such a prominent 700 times in the Bible. But it's also a word that people don't use. But Chaz, what happened, what really surprised us, and surprised me especially, is the number of people who wrote me or made comments to me that they loved what I said about goodness. And I thought, wow, that is interesting.
You're talking about the blog post that you're referencing?
The blog post. I had something about goodness there. And people thought that was a great idea. So I thought, all right, this is the angle that Laura and I can take. She can help trace down some of the stories. I will do a biblical study of the meaning of Tov in the Bible, goodness. God is good. We are called to be good. The fruit of the Spirit is good. There is none good, but those who are not good are made good by the power of God's grace through the Spirit. So we are to be good people. And we applied that idea as the central image that churches could focus on. And Chaz, I can't tell you the number of leaders who said, when this book comes out, we're going to use this in our among our elders or our deacons, or some people have leadership teams or leadership councils. You know, I'm a Bible guy. I want to call these people elders and deacons and bishops and stuff like that, or overseers. But I was surprised. I've been surprised and encouraged by the number who have told me they're going, as soon as it comes out, They're going to study it in their with their elders and deacons to work, to give them ideas for what they can do toward goodness. And this week, a couple of the students in my class, my new cohort at Northern in the New Testament at the master's level, several of them said, we're going to use this in our church and we're going to talk about goodness. So that was the origin. And I mapped goodness over against the problems that were emerging in these churches led by narcissistic and power-mongering, fear-mongering pastors. So this isn't simply a study of the word Tov, but it is what Tov looks like over against some of these problems in churches like narcissism and fear and institution creep. One of the things that I noticed, where instead of people being important, people think about the reputation of the institution, about mm-hmm. false narratives, that Tov tells the truth. And yeah. and in these churches, one of the words, Laura is the one who started seeing this pattern, is the word loyalty comes up all the time. Are you going to be loyal to the pastor, to the senior pastor, to the whoever, to the church? Or, and I said, are you going to do what's right? Or will we pursue justice? And then there's these pastors many times become celebrities. They are world-known figures who are treated like they're movie stars from Hollywood or professional athletes playing for, you know, the Chicago Bulls or something. But we said, no, a Tov culture focuses on service, not on celebrity. And when the pastor wants to be treated as a celebrity, we've got a major problem. And I'm nervous about calling pastors leaders. Pastors lead. But when we start figuring out what a leader is through the business world and then asking our pastors to function the way business leaders function, we got a major problem. Pastors pastor people into Christ-likeness, or what I like to call Christoformity. And instead of saying, I'm trying to be a leader, they're trying to be a servant that nurtures Christ-likeness in people. So we worked on that kind of circle of Tov that resists in light of the things that we were seeing in Harvest and the Southern Baptists and Sovereign Grace and the Catholic Church and Willow Creek. So those attributes of goodness were formed as resistance pieces to what's happening in too many churches.
Yeah, that's good. Laura, tell us something you maybe learned or were surprised by Tov that you saw, how that correlated to the type of conversation that you're hoping to have in the book.
Sure. I have a couple thoughts as my dad was talking. So first of all, we would ask him, he was getting questions a lot about what do we do so that we don't end up like Willow Creek. And I speak about Willow Creek because that's the one that I'm intimately know.
Right.
But the other thing that we were seeing come out of Willow Creek is the elders would get up and say, so we're creating these new policies and procedures to make sure that relationships between men and women are protected and, you know, men and women aren't alone together, that there's always a third person there. And I just felt like something feels off about this. We're talking about these policies and procedures. And so my dad would say, explain to us, it's not about creating a policy. It's about the goodness and character of the person.
Yeah.
So that's my angle on Tov, or my where it kind of really started clicking in my head, is that they're almost distracting us from the truth or something. Mm-hmm. And then when my dad was talking about the celebrity culture, so this one really hit home close to me, is because that does exist at Willow Creek, and mm-hmm. there is what I would call an in crowd. And I feel it felt as though the closer you got to Bill Hybels, the more important, for example, I might feel. And I felt I was kind of just axed out of the in crowd when I started talking about Willow Creek and supporting the women and calling them out publicly for not telling the truth, I got emails from people, one in particular that I'm thinking of right now, that pretty much I got broken up with as a friend, that I was out. I was out of the in crowd. And it just started a process for me thinking, this should never really exist in a church. We shouldn't feel, and I'm guilty of it too, I felt more important because, oh, I'm close to the Hybels family. And that's not right. It shouldn't be that the pastor is a celebrity and we feel cool and important when we're close to him or her. And we talk about that in the book about Tove is not a celebrity culture.
Yeah, and people get, and what Laura's talking about is, I think one of the expressions I use is that it is about self-enhancement. Mm-hmm. You start to feel like you're really important because you're near the inner circle, but there is an inner circle. And the whole thing, I kept saying, it's about character, but it's about the character of leader, of a pastor, a character of leaders around him, because leaders around a pastor in these kinds of churches can be called retainers. They are protecting and they are enhancing the wherewithal of that pastor. But it's character. A person of Tove doesn't do certain things and does other things. But that character of a pastor and the leaders is also to be compared with the character of a church, so that a church forms into a character culture. And this book is about churches forming character cultures of Tove. What practices, what habits, what actions do we need to have present in a church so that a church's culture becomes Tove? And so Laura and I and the whole family, we got to talking all the time about what are the characteristics of Tove? What are the characteristics of these churches? What do we need to do to help churches develop cultures of Tove? And this book is not an organizational transformation book that relies upon organization transformation theories. Those people will help us, and they will take what we have written and move beyond it. And I plan on working with someone about that and reading up on that. But this book tries to give a biblical categories that challenge character, church cultures that have a character of toxicity. We're trying to challenge those with the sorts of attributes and characteristics of character and culture of Tove, so that a different form of culture emerges in churches. And I have a student right now who's a specialist in this, and he was talking in class, and he said church cultures, to change a culture requires 7 years. Well, you know, a lot of people think, I'm going to preach a series of sermons I'm going to go long, and we're going to go 2 months. Whoa. And the church culture is going to change. And that's not going to happen. It takes a long time. Church cultures form. What happened at Harvest Bible Chapel? What's happened in these Southern Baptist churches? What happened at Willow Creek? What's happened in the Curia of the Vatican of the Roman Catholic Church? Did not happen overnight. These things take years, even decades, to form into the kinds of structures and habits and narratives and beliefs and protections and policies that form and help express that culture. A lot of those things don't form the culture. They emerge out of the culture. And Chaz, I know we're running out of time, but the other thing I wanted to say is the culture of a church is an agent.
It's bring that up.
Yeah, it's like an agent. It's something that acts upon us. Mm-hmm. If you've almost everyone has had this experience. If you're suddenly with a dozen people who are just full of mischief, either you walk away or you become mischievous. If you're with a group of people who sexualize cultures and comments all the time. You'll either pick it up or walk away. If you're in a culture that is marked by tov, marked by goodness, that everybody's like Mr. Rogers, then it will impact you to act like that. Mm-hmm. And so it takes a long time to get a culture that is an agent of tov. Mm-hmm. But that's what Laura and I have written about in this book. And that's, you know, that's our prayer. That's our hope. That's our dream, that churches will pick up this book. The leaders especially will read it. I think a lot of women who've been abused by church authority and even in sexual ways will pick up this book and say, this nails it. I was talking recently to someone who said, I was in a church that had all these problems with toxicity, but there were people who were really good and they did not have the power and they basically got ran out. So we want to help churches see what tov is and to help them take positive steps toward forming a culture of tov.
Yeah, that's good. Well, I'm so thankful for the book and your guys' willingness to be vulnerable on some of your own personal experiences and how, you know, you're able to give a template for what goodness does look like, because at the end of the day, that's what it's all about. So, all right. Well, yes, you're right, Scott. Yeah. We are getting on time. Go ahead and give us some closing okay. thoughts.
I would never have written this book without Laura. Yeah. And I couldn't have written the book that exists without her. So I can do the Bible stuff on my own. But Laura kept pushing and asking. And I had to develop ideas that I hadn't worked on that much. And so I had to work really hard. And as I told Laura, I'm doing something else. I have other things going on here. But this project.
I'm a kindergarten teacher.
That's right. Our back and forth here has been really a lot of fun of working together, but it pushed this idea of tov to start getting real in areas that I hadn't been thinking about. So the back and forth is what led to the existence of this book. And, you know, again, Chaz, our hope is that people aren't going to pick up this book hoping to hear more expose. There's expose in it. But they'll pick up this book because they want to have church cultures that are marked by goodness. That's our goal.
That's good. Laura, what's your hope for people who may pick up the book and read it?
Well, my hope is that every elder in every church would pick it up and read it, and that it would serve as a template to resist toxicity.
Yeah. I'd love that too. Mm-hmm. And you know, sometimes people don't even recognize the toxicity because it's the color of water. Mm-hmm. They're in it.
I was going to say that, Dad, is like, I didn't realize the toxicity of Willow Creek until I left Willow Creek and experienced our little Anglican church that is not perfect, but it's the opposite of a celebrity culture. It's the opposite of a loyalty culture. And I wasn't really able to see the toxicity of Willow Creek until I was out.
Yeah, that's good. All right, well, Scott, do you have any other closing thoughts to wrap up our time and tell people what they have to look forward to?
My closing thoughts are for you to admit where you are right now, Chaz, as you are interviewing Laura and me.
Well, I am right outside of Yellowstone in Henry Lake State Park. So we're enjoying a beautiful view right now. Exiled to my truck, but it's working all right because my kids are still playing in the trailer that I now live in.
And the wonders of technology that you can be at Yellowstone mm-hmm. National Park. Mm-hmm. And we're in the others are in three different cities listening in on this. And it's pretty amazing. But I want to thank you again, Chaz, for interviewing Laura and me about this book. And we're we're hoping for good things for the book.
Absolutely, as I expect there will be. And we're not done with the conversation. We still have a few more conversations around this that we'll be digging into the book deeper. So I want to encourage you to log on and grab the book and be able to follow along with us in our conversations. But Scott, Laura, thanks for being with us. And thanks, as always, to our listeners for joining us. We're excited to be with you next time as we continue the conversation on how the kingdom took root then and how it's taking root now.